Hey, all you Tolkien heads, I'm David Gaddy.
And I'm Jeremiah Orr from the Theonauts Podcast. And you're listening to the Secret Fire Podcast with your hosts, Michael, Micah, and Brendan.
Right here on the GCT Network, your Great Commission transmission.
Gandalf, my old friend, this will be a night to remember.
Broadcasting from Eregion, Middle-earth, this is the Secret Fire Podcast, sent to burn at the heart of the world, episode number 32. I'm Michael.
And I'm Micah.
On this episode, Caradhras the Cruel and the Redhorn Gate, the tallest of the mountains of Moria. And you already know what is going to happen. We invite you to come along, join the fellowship, become a servant of the Secret Fire, right here on the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission transmission.
For take two.
Of course.
I can't stand it when I forget to record the show.
Well, that happens.
No. It's not supposed to. It does happen. That's the problem. It happens often. Michael, what's been going on?
Nothing.
Nothing at all.
No.
No, you're reading the same book as me.
Yep.
What?
Sorcerer's Stone.
Yeah, so did you read through the entire series again and then starting all over?
No.
Or do you skip around?
I tend to skip around, but most often what I do is I start from the first, I get to the fourth, and then I stop halfway through the fourth and I go back to the first.
What?
I don't like the darker bits. And from the latter half of the fourth onward, it's all darker. And for a relaxing time, I like the earlier ones.
All right. Well, I just finished reading Sorcerer's Stone. In fact, this morning. Man, I love spending time in the Wizarding World. I love Harry Potter. I love the Wizarding World. I'd love to be able to do a Harry Potter podcast, but there is not enough time in order to do that. So I don't think there's much risk of that happening as you're lifting your microphone up just a little bit over there. Everybody, you can hear that Brendan is not in the studio again. He just had the opening for his play Arsenic and Old Lace there in Shelbyville, Tennessee at the Community Arts Center, The Fly, as they call it. And he is directing as well as performing in that. And I saw a post that the first night, the opening night, was great. And so he's got this weekend of performances, next weekend of performances, and we're hoping that he'll be back in the studio the week after that in order to continue the journey with us here as we go through Middle Earth. Did you have anything that you wanted to recap from last episode?
No.
You know, I think that we ought to go ahead and jump right into it, and we will go ahead and let Gimli recap it. We had a lot to say about Gimli on the previous episode. A fantastic character and really shining through so far in this chapter.
There is the land where the dwarves worked of old. The places there stand tall in our dreams, but I know them and their names, for under them lies Khazad-dûm, the Dwaradelph, that is now called the Black Pit, Moria in the Elvish tongue. Yonder stands the Redhorn, cruel Caradhras.
Cruel or not, we must climb to the Redhorn Gate, under the far side of Caradhras. We shall come then, down by the Dimrill Stair, into the deep vale of the dwarves.
My heart trembles at the thought that I may see it.
May you have joy at the sight, Gimli, but we at least cannot stay in that valley. We must go down the Silver Load into the secret woods and so to the great river, and then...
And then?
To the end of the journey. In the end, we cannot look too far ahead. Let us be glad that the first stage is safely over. I think we will rest here now that the day is breaking, and sleep.
Again, that is from the 1981 BBC Radio 4 production of the dramatization of The Lord of the Rings. It was a 26 half-hour stereo installments. It had previously been adapted as a 12-part BBC radio program in 1955 and 1956, but unfortunately no recordings are known to have survived that time. I would love to hear that. It was also produced in 1979 by The Mind's Eye for National Public Radio in the United States. Fantastic stuff. It originally aired from March 8th until August 30th of 1981, and it aired on Sunday afternoons at, well, right at noon, 12 noon to 12:30, and then would repeat the following Wednesday from 10:30 p.m. to 11 p.m. I would love to have been sitting there in 1981 and gathering around the radio and enjoying this fantastic production. And last week, Micah, you asked me, you threw me a curveball, who plays Aragorn in that? And that is a very famous British actor by the name of Sir Robert Stevens, who he passed away in November of 1995 at the young age of 64. My favorite besides Bill Nighy as Samwise in this is, well, Gandalf the Grey, played by the fantastic, legendary Michael Hordern. And everybody, if you see his face once, you have seen him in an incredibly long career. In fact, it's a whole separate Wikipedia page just to cover his stage and screen and television performances. A legendary Shakespearean actor. And of course, Frodo Baggins is played by Bilbo Baggins.
So cool.
Yes. Ian Holm plays Frodo Baggins in this. Who plays Bilbo? John LeMessurier. Mm. LeMessurier. I don't know. But he's a pretty good looking dude there. Alrighty. So let's go ahead and back up just a little bit, get a running start as we continue our journey to Caradhras the Cruel. So last time we ended up with the shadow that passed over and blocked the stars. In fact, it was the cold, chill hour before the first stir of dawn. And the moon was low. Frodo looked up at the sky. Suddenly, he saw or felt a shadow pass over the high stars, as if for a moment they faded and then flashed out again. He shivered. "Did you see anything pass over?" he whispered to Gandalf, who was just ahead. "No, but I felt it, whatever it was," he answered. "It may be nothing, only a wisp of thin cloud." "It was moving fast then," muttered Aragorn, "and not with the wind." What happens next? You ready?
I am. Let's go.
Page number 286 in the one volume edition?
Yes.
Okay. Nothing further happened that night. The next morning dawned even brighter than before, but the air was chill again. Already the wind was turning back towards the east. For two more nights, they marched on, climbing steadily but ever more slowly as the road wound up into the hills and the mountains towered up nearer and nearer. On the third morning, Caradhras rose before them, a mighty peak, tipped with snow like silver, but with sheer naked sides, dull red as if stained with blood. Mm-hmm. Where are we right now in Lord of the Rings Online?
We're somewhere in Holin.
Okay.
Holin? How do you say it?
Holin, I think. I don't know. I listen to people pronounce it, and that seems to be what it sounds like. There was a black look in the sky, and the sun was
Wane?
Wan. Hmm. It's like put a T on the end, and it would be want, or put a D, and it would be wand. And I believe he used that because just a few pages before, or several paragraphs before, he used the word pale, because that's what wan means.
Oh.
The wind had gone now round to the northeast. Gandalf snuffed the air and looked back. "Winter deepens behind us," he said quietly to Aragorn. "The heights away north are whiter than they were. Snow is lying far down their shoulders. Tonight we shall be on our way high up towards the Redhorn Gate. We may well be seen by watchers on that narrow path and waylaid by some evil, but the weather may prove a more deadly enemy than any. What do you think of your course now, Aragorn?" That's kind of challenging.
Yeah, a bit. They're butting heads just a little bit. I mean,
well, they don't know. This is the first danger that the entire company has been in.
Mm-hmm.
the entire fellowship, all nine. And Aragorn does not, under any circumstances, want to go where?
Moria.
Moria.
Understandably.
Yes. Wow. And perils known and unknown will grow as we go on, but we must go on. And it is no good our delaying the passage of the mountains. Further south, there are no passes till one comes to the Gap of Rohan. I do not trust that way since your news of Saruman. Who knows which side now the marshals of the Horse Lord serve? Who knows indeed, said Gandalf, but there is another way, and not by the pass of Caradhras, the dark and secret way that we have spoken of. But let us not speak of it again, not yet. Say nothing to the others, I beg, not until it is plain that there is no other way. We must decide before we go further, answered Gandalf. Then let us weigh the matter in our minds while the others rest and sleep, said Aragorn. In the late afternoon, while the others were finishing their breakfast, Gandalf and Aragorn went aside together and stood looking at Caradhras. Its sides were now dark and sullen, and its head was in gray cloud. Frodo watched them, wondering which way the debate would go. When they returned to the company, Gandalf spoke, and then he knew that it had been decided to face the weather and the high pass. He was relieved. He could not guess what was the other dark and secret way, but the very mention of it had seemed to fill Aragorn with dismay, and Frodo was glad that it had been abandoned.
That's powerful to see a character like Aragorn be afraid of taking a path, because he's the master of paths.
He's been on them all.
Yeah.
Right? He knows what... Wow. It builds the tension and the drama going on. From signs that we have seen lately, said Gandalf, I fear that the Redhorn Gate may be watched, and I also have doubts of the weather that is coming up behind. Snow may come. We must go with all the speed that we can. Even so, it will take us more than two marches before we reach the top of the pass. Dark will come early this evening. We must leave as soon as you can get ready. I will add a word of advice, if I may, said Boromir. I was born under the shadow of the White Mountains and know something of journeys in the high places. We shall meet bitter cold, if no worse, before we come down on the other side. It will not help us to keep so secret that we are frozen to death. When we leave here, where there are still a few trees and bushes, each of us should carry a faggot of wood as large as he can bear. And Bill could take a bit more, couldn't you, lad? Said Sam. The pony looked at him mournfully. Very well, said Gandalf, but we must not use the wood, not unless it is a choice between fire and death. That's a little forward there.
Mm-hmm.
The company set out again with good speed at first, but soon their way became steep and difficult. The twisting and climbing road had in many places almost disappeared and was blocked with many fallen stones. The night grew deadly dark under great clouds. A bitter wind swirled among the rocks. By midday, they had climbed to the knees of the great mountain. The narrow path now wound under a sheer wall of cliffs to the left, above which the grim flanks of Caradhras towered up invisible in the gloom. On the right was a gulf of darkness where the land fell suddenly into a deep ravine. Does it look anything like that?
Definitely. I'm there right now.
Yes.
A massive ravine.
I went exploring last time after the last episode so I could take some photographs for our cover artwork on the Secret Fire podcast page. And I hadn't been up there before.
Really?
Yeah. So very interesting. Ah, there's Bill. Laboriously, they climbed a sharp slope and halted for a moment at the top. Frodo felt a soft touch on his face. He put out his arm and saw the dim white flakes of snow settling on his sleeve. They went on. But before long, the snow was falling fast, filling all the air and swirling into Frodo's eyes. The dark, bent shapes of Gandalf and Aragorn, only a pace or two ahead, could hardly be seen. What quests are up there on the Redhorn Pass?
Just a couple. There's actually a bingo quest that leads you up there, I believe.
What?
Yeah. And which I'm sure you've probably
done.
Well,
then I must have been up there.
Yeah.
Okay. Huh. Well, that would have been my old computer. And when I get into snowfall and things like that, it would just freeze. Now, this new one, I have no problem, and it's awesome. I don't like this at all, panted Sam just behind. Snow's all right on a fine morning, but I like to be in bed while it's falling.
Same.
Don't we all? That is a wonderful cozy thought right there. I wish this lot would go off to Hobbiton. Folk might welcome it there. Except on the high moors of the North Farthing, a heavy fall was rare in the Shire and was regarded as a pleasant event and a chance for fun. No living hobbit, save Bilbo, could remember the fell winter of 1311, that Shire Reckoning, let's keep that in mind, when white wolves invaded the Shire over the frozen Brandywine. Mm.
That's some hobbit history that it's only mentioned there, as far as I know.
Yeah, as far as I can recall. Gandalf halted. Snow was thick on his hood and shoulders. It was already ankle deep about his boots. This is what I feared, he said. What do you say now, Aragorn? That I feared it too, Aragorn answered, but less than other things. I knew the risk of snow, though it seldom falls heavily so far south, save high up in the mountains. But we are not high yet. We are still far down, where the paths are usually open all the winter. I wonder if this is a contrivance of the enemy, said Boromir. They say in my land that he can govern the storms in the mountains of shadow that stand upon the borders of Mordor. He has strange powers and many allies.
His arm has grown long indeed, said Gimli. If he can draw snow down from the north to trouble us here 300 leagues away.
His arm has grown long, said Gandalf. Man, that really, when Gandalf says something like that, that really punctuates the doom that is growing, the darkness that is growing. While they were halted, the wind died down and the snow slackened until it almost ceased. They tramped on again, but they had not gone more than a furlong when the storm returned with fresh fury.
It's like the mountain saying, oh, they're undercover. I might as well not even waste my efforts right now.
Yep. And a furlong is about, I think it's 1/8 of a mile. I think it's equal to something 660 feet, somewhere around there.
Okay.
I believe that it has to do with the original length was a furrow or a burr, or as you are, you know, field. On the farm, how long are we going to plow a furlong? Okay, yeah. So it's not very far. Wow. The wind whistled and the snow became a blinding blizzard. Soon, even Boromir found it hard to keep going. The hobbits, bent nearly double, toiled along behind the taller folk, but it was plain that they could not go much further if the snow continued. Frodo's feet felt like lead. Pippin was dragging behind. Even Gimli, as stout as any dwarf could be, was grumbling as he trudged. The company halted suddenly, as if they had come to an agreement without any words being spoken. They heard eerie noises in the darkness around them. It may have been only a trick of the wind in the cracks and gullies of the rocky wall, but the sounds were those of shrill cries and wild howls of laughter. Stones began to fall from the mountainside, whistling over their heads or crashing on the path beside them. Every now and again, they heard a dull rumble as a great boulder rolled down from hidden heights above. "We cannot go further tonight," said Boromir. "Let those call it the wind who will. There are fell voices on the air, and these stones are aimed at us." "I do call it the wind," said Aragorn, "but that does not make what you say untrue. There are many evil and unfriendly things in the world that have little love for those that go on two legs and yet are not in league with Sauron, but have purposes of their own. Some have been in this world longer than he."
Ooh.
That makes me think of creatures like Ungoliant and and that dog creature thing that I can't remember right now.
You mean the werewolf of...
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember his name.
You know, and even going back to our discussion on Tom Bombadil, this is another glimpse into bigger mysteries. There are things that aren't even discussed or explored in the Legendarium.
And that's a good thing.
It's a wonderful thing. We love that mystery because that gives your mind places to wander even beyond what the grand scope and landscape that he has created. Mm-hmm. "Caradhras was called the Cruel and had an ill name," said Gimli. "Long years ago, when rumor of Sauron had not been heard in these lands. It matters little who is the enemy if we cannot beat off his attack," said Gandalf. "But what can we do?" cried Pippin miserably. He was leaning on Merry and Frodo, and he was shivering. "Either stop where we are or go back," said Gandalf. "It is no good going on. Only a little higher, if I remember rightly, this path leaves the cliff and runs into a wide shallow through at the bottom of a long, hard slope. We should have no shelter there from snow or stones or anything else. And it is no good going back while the storm holds," says Aragorn. "We have passed no place on the way up that offered more shelter than this cliff wall we are under now." "Shelter," muttered Sam. "If this is shelter, then one wall and no roof makes a house." I love Sam.
Sam always with the Hobbit parables.
Yes. Maxims and all that stuff. The company now gathered together as close to the cliff as they could. It faced southwards, and near the bottom it leaned out a little so that they hoped it would give them some protection from the northerly wind and from the falling stones. But eddying blasts swirled around them from every side, and the snow flowed down in ever denser clouds. They huddled together with their backs to the wall. Bill the Pony stood patiently but dejectedly in front of the hobbits and screened them a little. But before long, the drifting snow was above his hocks, and it went on mounting. If they had had no larger companions, the hobbits would soon have been entirely buried. A great sleepiness came over Frodo. He felt himself sinking fast into a warm and hazy dream. He thought of a fire. He thought a fire was heating his toes, and out of the shadows on the other side of the hearth, he heard Bilbo's voice speaking. "I don't think much of your diary," he said. "Snowstorms on January the 12th. There was no need to come back to report that." "But I wanted rest and sleep, Bilbo," Frodo answered with an effort when he felt himself shaken, and he came back painfully to wakefulness. Boromir had lifted him off the ground out of a nest of snow. "This will be the death of the halflings, Gandalf," said Boromir. "It is useless to sit here until the snow goes over our heads. We must do something to save ourselves." This is a different Boromir than Peter Jackson's Boromir.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
You know, I don't detect that duplicitous nature that Sean Bean had.
Yeah, he's always... He feels scheming and conniving.
Yes.
But it's not yet quite.
Right. And Boromir in the book is described as an honorable man. Mm-hmm. And I believe that he is an honorable man. And even if that translates into being found in a moment of weakness when the ring presents itself to him, because what's his first thought when he has access to the ring?
He could use it to save his people. Yes. He's always thinking of the lesser folk.
Yeah.
Even here when he's...
Well, he's thinking as a protector. Mm-hmm. That's what he is. He is a man of Gondor. Yeah. So anyway, I just really enjoy that. I enjoy hearing Boromir in this chapter. This will be the death of the halflings. He's concerned for them. His concern right now is survival. Mm-hmm. And he can see that these little people are going to be buried. If we weren't here, they'd be dead. And we're all going to die. This is no good. We must do something to save ourselves. Give them this, said Gandalf, searching in his pack and drawing out a leathern flask. Just a mouthful each for all of us. It is very precious. It is Miruvor.
Sure.
The cordial of Imladris. Elrond gave it to me at our parting. Pass it around. As soon as Frodo had swallowed a little of the warm and fragrant liquor, he felt a new strength of heart, and the heavy drowsiness left his limbs. The others also revived and found fresh hope and vigor. But the snow did not relent. It whirled about them thicker than ever, and the wind grew louder. You know, I wasn't planning on stopping right here for some other conversation, but this is actually a really good spot. It didn't dawn on me. Here they are. Boromir lays out the problem. If we weren't here, the halflings would already be dead. And if we stay here any longer, none of us are going to survive. We must do something to save ourselves. And here is a little mini Eucatastrophe, because Gandalf has something that will help them. Elrond gave it to him. Elrond the Wise, right? Take this in case you need it. This is the cordial of Imladris. And the effects are instantaneous. This warm and fragrant liquor, just a little mouthful, and Frodo felt new strength of heart, and the heavy drowsiness left his limbs. But not only him, the others also revived and found fresh hope. Hope. Going back to the flight to the ford from that terrible thing that happened at the base of Weathertop when Frodo is stabbed by a Morgul blade and he's on his way to becoming a wraith. And Gandalf says, let's go. We have hope. If we make it to Elrond's house, there's healing, there's refreshment, the tables are well laden. All these things kind of tie in together. And let me move through this a little bit more quickly here. We now have the three offices of Messiah, prophet, priest, and king, all together, and they're in a thlipsis is the Greek word, which means a pressing together. We would say between a rock and a hard place. They are literally in between a rock and a hard place. They're in between the rock of Caradhras and the hard place of this snow, the storm that's being sent against them by the enemy. And so we have the three offices. So altogether, we have a good picture of Christ Jesus here in at least three people here. And Jesus is an antitype of a particular person, many people in the Old Testament. The one that I'm thinking of right now is David. David, who Jesus descended from. David was a type of the Messiah. And we can go through the Psalms and read over and over and over again about David being in between a rock and a hard place, being chased by his enemies, whether it is whether Saul or the armies of Saul or whoever, or whether it was Caradhras or whether it was Sauron sending this storm against him. These Psalms many of the Psalms are David crying out to God for salvation, for protection from his enemies. And many of these same Psalms where he is doing that are quoted in the New Testament by Jesus or attributed to Jesus by the writers of the New Testament. And I just want to read through a short Psalm here, Psalm 70, and see if this sounds like the position that they're in here. Oh God, this is out of the New American Standard Bible, the NASB. Oh God, hasten to deliver me. Oh Lord, hasten to my help. Let those be ashamed and humiliated who seek my life. Let those be turned back and dishonored who delight in my hurt. Let those be turned back because of their shame who say, aha, aha. Let all who seek you rejoice and be glad in you. And let those who love your salvation say continually, let God be magnified. But I am afflicted and needy. Hasten to me, O God. You are my help and my deliverer. O Lord, do not delay. That's where they find themselves right now. In fact, let's go down just a few verses into Psalm 70, because it just continues the thought. In you, O Lord, I have taken refuge. Let me never be ashamed. In your righteousness, deliver me and rescue me. Incline your ear to me and save me. Be to me a rock of habitation to which I may continually come. You have given commandment to save me, for you are my rock and my fortress. Rescue me, O my God, out of the hand of the wicked and out of the grasp of the wrongdoer and ruthless man, for you are my hope. O Lord God, you are my confidence from my youth. By you I have been sustained in my birth. You are he who took me from my mother's womb. My praise is continually of you. And I'd invite listeners to go ahead and complete reading verses 6 through 24 of Psalm 71. The cry out, we have to do something, here comes salvation. And it is another example of providence. Well, I have this because Elrond gave me this. And here they are. As soon as Frodo had swallowed a little of the warm and fragrant liquor, he felt a new strength of heart, and the heavy drowsiness left his limbs. The others also revived and found fresh hope and vigor, but the snow did not relent. It whirled about them thicker than ever, and the wind blew louder. "What do you say to fire?" asked Boromir suddenly. "The choice seems near now between fire and death, Gandalf. Doubtless we shall be hidden from all unfriendly eyes when the snow has covered us, but that will not help us." "You may make a fire if you can," answered Gandalf. "If there are any watchers that can endure this storm, then they can see us, fire or no." But though they had brought wood and kindlings by the advice of Boromir, it passed the skill of elf or even dwarf to strike a flame that would hold amid the swirling wind or catch in the wet fuel. At last, reluctantly, Gandalf himself took a hand. Picking up a faggot, he held it aloft for a moment, and then, with a word of command, say it, Micah.
Nor an edrath amin.
Hey, that's perfect! With sure. That word, he thrust the end of his staff into the midst of it. At once, a great spout of green and blue flames sprang out, and the wood flared and sputtered.
There you go.
I had to turn a page. If there are any to see, then I, at least, am revealed to them, he said. I have written, Gandalf is here, in signs that all can read from Rivendell to the mouths of Anduin. But the company cared no longer for watchers or unfriendly eyes. Their hearts were rejoiced to see the light of the fire. The wood burned merrily, and though all around it the snow hissed and pools of slush crept under their feet, they warmed their hands gladly at the blaze. There they stood, stooping in a circle round the little dancing and blowing flames. A red light was on their tired and anxious faces. Behind them, the night was like a black wall. That's another little glimpse. It reminds me of David. He'd call out to God, and God would send these little, you know, reprieves. You can do it, David. You're the man for the job here. I'll send you some comfort here. Here's a cordial of Imladris to warm you up. Here's a fire, you know, to warm you. These things that are taking place, it is... It's all that it takes for this company to keep going. But the wood was burning fast and the snow still fell. The fire burned low and the last faggot was thrown on. The night is getting old, said Aragorn. The dawn is not far off.
If any dawn can pierce these clouds, said Gimli.
Boromir stepped out of the circle and stared up into the blackness. The snow is growing less, he said, and the wind is quieter. Frodo gazed wearily at the flakes still falling out of the dark to be revealed white for a moment in the light of the dying fire. But for a long time, he could see no sign of their slackening. Then suddenly, as sleep was beginning to creep over him, he was aware that the wind had indeed fallen, and the flakes were becoming larger and fewer. Very slowly, a dim light began to grow. At last, the snow stopped altogether. As the light grew stronger, it showed a silent, shrouded world. Below their refuge were white humps and domes and shapeless deeps beneath which the path that they had trodden was altogether lost. But the heights above were hidden in great clouds, still heavy with the threat of snow. Gimli looked up and shook his head.
Caradhras has not forgiven us, he said. He has more snow yet to fling at us if we go on. The sooner we go back and down, the better.
To this, all agreed. But their retreat was now difficult. It might well prove impossible. Only a few paces from the ashes of the fire, the snow lay many feet deep, higher than the heads of the hobbits. In places, it had been scooped and piled by the wind into great drifts against the cliff. If Gandalf would go before us with a bright flame, he might melt a path for you, said Legolas. The storm had troubled him little, and he alone of the company remained still light of heart.
If elves could fly over mountains, they may fetch the sun to save us, answered Gandalf. But I must have something to work on. I cannot burn snow. Well, said Boromir, when heads are at a loss, bodies must serve, as we say in my country, which is a nice proverb, mm-hmm. maxim yep. Of Gondor. The strongest of us must seek a way. See, though all is snow-clad, our path as we came up turned about that shoulder of rock down yonder. It was there that the snow first began to burden us. If we could reach that point, maybe it would prove easier beyond. It is no more than a furlong off, I guess. Then let us force a path thither, you and I, said Aragorn. Aragorn was the tallest of the company, but Boromir, little less in height, was broader and heavier in build. He led the way, and Aragorn followed him. Slowly they moved off and were soon toiling heavily. In places, the snow was breast high, and often Boromir seemed to be swimming or burrowing with his great arms rather than walking. Legolas watched them for a while with a smile upon his lips, and then he turned to the others.
The strongest must seek a way, say you? But I say, let a plowman plow, but choose an otter for swimming, and for running light over grass and leaf, or over snow, an elf. With that, he sprang forth nimbly, and then Frodo noticed, as if for the first time, though he had long known it, that the elf had no boots, but wore only light shoes, as he always did, and his feet made little imprint in the snow. Farewell, he said to Gandalf. I go to find the sun. Then, swift as a runner over firm sand, he shot away, and quickly overtaking the toiling men, with a wave of his hand as he passed them by, and sped into the distance and vanished around the rocky turn.
That's what I feel. Well, I feel a lot of things about Peter's elves lack elvenness, but that especially. They're humorous.
Yes, lighthearted.
Lighthearted folk, you know?
Yeah. I love that. Bye. I go to seek the sun. What did Gandalf say? You know, the others waited, huddling together, watching until Boromir and Aragorn dwindled into black specks in the whiteness. At length, they too passed from sight. The time dragged on. The clouds lowered, and now a few flakes of snow came curling down again. An hour, maybe, went by, though it seemed far longer. And then, at last, they saw Legolas coming back. At the same time, Boromir and Aragorn reappeared around the bend, far behind him, and came laboring up the slope. Well, cried Legolas as he ran up, I have not brought the sun. She is walking in the blue fields of the south, and a little wreath of snow on this Redhorn hillock troubles her not at all. But I have brought back a gleam of good hope for those who are doomed to go on feet. There is the greatest wind drift of all just around the turn, and there our strong men were almost buried. They despaired until I returned and told them that the drift was little wider than a wall. And on the other side, the snow suddenly grows less, while further down it is no more than a white coverlet to cool a hobbit's toes. Ah, it is as I said, growled Gimli. It was no ordinary storm. It is the ill will of Caradhras. He does not love elves and dwarves, and that drift was laid to cut off our escape. But happily, your Caradhras has forgotten that you have men with you, said Boromir, who came up at that moment. And doughty men, too, if I may say it.
I think it's doughty.
Okay. Doughty men, too, if I may say it, though lesser men with spades might have served you better. Still, we have thrust a lane through the drift. And for that, all here may be grateful who cannot run as light as elves. But how are we going to get down there, even if you have cut through the drift, said Pippin, voicing the thought of all the hobbits. Have hope, said Boromir. I am weary, but I still have some strength left, and Aragorn too. We will bear the little folk. The others, no doubt, will make shift to tread the paths behind us. Come, Master Peregrine, I will begin with you. He lifted up the hobbit. Cling to my back. I shall need my arms, he said, and strode forward. Aragorn with Merry came behind. Pippin marveled at his strength, seeing the passage that he had already forced with no other tool than his great limbs. Even now, burdened as he was widening the track for those who followed, thrusting the snow aside as he went. Boromir's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
They came at length to the great drift. It was flung across the mountain path like a sheer and sudden wall, and its crest, sharp as if shaped with knives, reared up more than twice the height of Boromir. But through the middle, a passage had been beaten, rising and falling like a bridge. On the far side, Merry and Pippin were set down, and there they waited with Legolas for the rest of the company to arrive. After a while, Boromir returned carrying Sam. Behind, in the narrow but now well-trodden track, came Gandalf, leading Bill, with Gimli perched among the baggage. Last came Aragorn carrying Frodo. They passed through the lane, but hardly had Frodo touched the ground when a deep rumble there rolled down, a fall of stones and slithering snow. The spray of it half blinded the company as they crouched against the cliff, and when the air cleared again, they saw that the path was blocked behind them.
Enough! Enough! Cried Gimli. We are departing as quickly as we may!
And indeed, with the last stroke, with that last stroke, the malice of the mountain seemed to be expended, as if Caradhras was satisfied that the invaders had been beaten off and would not dare to return. The thread of snow lifted, the clouds began to break, and the light grew broader. We talked about this a little bit last week, but the anthropomorphizing of the mountain.
Yeah.
Right?
And a long time ago, I don't remember which episode it was, I said something about the waters of Caradhras, or the waters that flow down into the Bruinen from the mountains had a certain... I should have found the passage before I brought it up, but I remember saying something about that, and the power this mountain has, even the water that flows down from it.
Why, does it end up feeding into the Bruinen?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I do remember you mentioning that.
Yeah, it was a long time.
You said, oh, that's a forward. And here we are at that forward. Wow. As Legolas had reported, they found that the snow became steadily more shallow as they went down, so that even the hobbits could trudge along. Soon, they all stood once more on the flat shelf at the head of the steep slope where they had felt the first flakes of snow the night before. The morning was now far advanced. From the high place, they looked back westward over the lower lands. Far away in the tumble of country that lay at the foot of the mountains was the dale from which they had started to climb the pass. Frodo's legs ached. He was chilled to the bone and hungry, and his head was dizzy as he thought of the long and painful march downhill. Black specks swam before his eyes. He rubbed them, but the black specks remained. In the distance below him, but still high above the lower foothill, dark dots were circling the air. The birds again, said Aragorn, pointing down. That cannot be helped. That cannot be helped now, said Gandalf. Whether they are good or evil or have nothing to do with us at all, we must go down at once, not even on the knees of Caradhras. Will we wait for another nightfall? A cold wind flowed down behind them as they turned their backs on the Redhorn Gate and stumbled wearily down the slope. Caradhras had defeated them. Wow. What do you think, Micah?
That's one of my favorite chapters for sure.
Yes.
It's just the power that you feel swirling around this mountain, and it's not even in the movie. I believe it was made out to be that Saruman had been sending the storm, but no, it's the mountain itself.
Yes,
that's powerful. This thing that has been there before even any of these people.
An enemy, but not Sauron.
No.
And certainly not Saruman. It's an enemy that has been there, just that predates. Yes. Fantastic. And, you know, he's really, Tolkien, really drawing on old epics, you know, for that concept. Mm-hmm. Again, the anthropomorphizing, if that's the proper word, of Caradhras. Fantastic chapter, fantastic action. They got as far up as they could before Caradhras finally defeated them. Mm-hmm. Tried. They kept going, and they had help along the way.
Yeah.
And that is what reminds me of David and fulfilled ultimately in Christ. And here we had the prophet Frodo, Gandalf, the priest Frodo, and the king Aragorn all together. Now, did Caradhras really... win? Or did he just prevent them from going that way?
Well, if that was its intention, then yeah, it was a victory for...
Well, now, if Caradhras is... well, it is one of the mountains of Moria. The three... Moria is underneath of three mountains. Those three that we talked about. Caradhras, Silvertine, and Cloudyhead. Mm-hmm. Right? So, is Caradhras forcing them down into Moria?
Ooh, that's an interesting thought.
I mean, is there some kind of... is there some kind of collusion taking place? Who knows? Wow.
Interesting theory.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, and that is where we stop with the reading today.
You need say no more. We'd best get a move on. There are still goblins about.
Oh, bother. More mountains?
No. Don't you see? The sun is setting in the west. Behind the mountains, we're on the other side, to the edge of the land beyond.
So, dear listeners, what part of this discussion, what's this chapter? The Ring Goes South.
Yes.
Of what we discussed today, what really stood out to you? What sticks out to you? What thoughts do you have? What do you want to bring to the fellowship that we can share with everybody out there that is listening? We'll give you all the ways to contact us here in just a moment. But in the meantime, the party replies did not go unanswered.
What on earth are these?
Replies to the party invitations.
Good gracious.
Yes, good gracious. We always ask for one of the things that we ask you to do for us is to leave us a review in iTunes, because that helps to bolster and improve the discoverability of the show when people are searching their podcast app on their iPhones or iPads or what have you. And we got a new review titled Enjoyable, Lively, Yet Deeply Profound. 5 stars left by TWZ17. The review says, a great breakdown of the brilliant work of Tolkien. 3 different characters walking the long roads through Middle Earth. Well, it's been 2 characters here the last couple of times, but this continuing on. The search for Christian symbolism and deeper meaning is one of the greatest fruits of this podcast. Keep up the good work. Thank you so much, TWZ17.
Yes, thank you very much.
That is so encouraging, and really, we don't feel that we deserve those kinds of accolades. We're just here talking about what we love, mm-hmm. and we're just so blessed that so many of you out there enjoy the format, enjoy how we do this, enjoy the discussions that we have. It's so encouraging. So we can't thank you enough, and welcome to the fellowship. We are blessed to have you in the fellowship. So nothing going on, Micah?
No,
nothing you need to talk about.
What about you?
Just doing all this stuff. Hey, you know what? Here's something that's neat. So I'm preparing, you know, I do a radio show on the weekends on our local radio station, a music show, and I'm preparing for next weekend, because it's on Saturday and Sunday mornings. Well, I'm preparing for St. Patrick's Day weekend, okay? And so put together a playlist, and one of the songs in that playlist is by our very own Mark Gunn, a version of Johnny Jump Up that he recorded. I can't remember which album it's on right now. Oh, forgive me. Happy Death Songs, or what? I don't have iTunes pulled up right now, so forgive me. But regardless, looking forward to sharing that. And Mark just released a brand new album. I believe it's another album dedicated to Firefly. So if you don't follow him on Twitter, you really need to. Mark Gunn Music. And remember, that's MarkGunn Music on Twitter. Or go to markgunn.com to his website. He's also part of the Brobdingnagian Bards, who provided our theme song. And so we'll give you the link to their website a little bit later on. And I believe the Brobdingnagian Bards are, they have a... like a Kickstarter campaign or something going on for a new album.
Oh, cool.
Of the Bards. And really looking forward to that, because it's great when he works with Andrew, because Andrew is a multi-instrumentalist and things such as that as well. So anyway, that's it. That's it. But next time, we are going to move on to Lord of the Rings, Book 2, Chapter 4, A Journey in the Dark. Mm. Are you excited to start? How many episodes do you predict for A Journey in the Dark?
Well,
we did four.
Minimum of three.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Micah, that's where we get to the big one.
I am a servant of the secret fire.
Spoilers.
Oh, sorry. Anyway. All right, well, that's it for this week or this time. But before we leave, we have some party invitations to send out. The Secret Fire Podcast is live in the GCT Network studio whenever we are actually live in the studio. And we'll send out notifications when we're broadcasting on our Twitch page at twitch.tv/Secret Fire Podcast.
And the best way to get notified when we're live is in the studio via Twitter at Secret Fire Cast. And you can join us in the Arkenstone server on Lord of the Rings Online at lotro.com.
You can send us email to secretfire@gctnetwork.com or call the Hobbit Hotline at 507-407-GCTN. Leave us a voicemail and we can share it with the listeners on an upcoming adventure here. Again, the Hobbit Hotline of Fatty Bulger is standing by in Crick Hollow, still knees a knocking. Call 507-407-4286. You can find the Secret Fire Podcast in iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, or your favorite podcatcher. Just search them all for the Secret Fire Podcast. Our theme song, Hobbit's Dance, is from the album Memories of Middle-Earth by Brobdingnagian Bards. So find out more about them and buy all of their music. Support them. We want more bards. Get over to their website at thebards.net. To find out more about the Secret Fire Podcast, as well as our other shows, including Finding Christ in Cinema and The Theonauts, visit our main website at gctnetwork.com. Now, if you like the Secret Fire Podcast, please share it with your friends and leave us a review in iTunes. But if you love the Secret Fire Podcast, please become a patron and a sustaining member of the fellowship on our Patreon page at patreon.com/GCTN. And until next time...
I don't know half of you half as well as I should like.
That's not it. No. And until next time... Where is it? I don't know.
I regret to announce this is the end. I'm going now. I bid you all a very fond farewell.
Farewell.
Goodbye. Farewell.
It was tied to a Caradhras.
That would be a very heavy anvil.
You are tuned in to the GCT Network.
Is your Great Commission transmission
at gctnetwork.com.